And that's where the try and pace come in really handy, because that little bit of adhesion allows me to sit the patient up, hand them a mirror. I warn them they have to be careful because they can knock these off, but it gives them a chance to look at those in place, because I'm not going to put them in until they tell me they love them.
Do they sign off on these things? Like literally sign
Every
off?
time, every single time.
Welcome to Austin, Texas, and welcome to the Phil Klein Dental Podcast. What does it really take to create porcelain veneers that look stunning, fit perfectly, and last for years? Why do some veneer cases feel effortless while others become stressful before the final cementation appointment? And with so many bonding systems, cements, and digital workflows available, how do you separate the techniques that truly matter from all the noise? Joining us today is Dr. Gary Rads, a nationally recognized clinician, educator, and speaker who has been helping dentists master aesthetic dentistry for decades while practicing in Denver, Colorado for more than 30 years. In this episode, he shares his proven workflow for creating predictable, highly aesthetic porcelain veneers, from diagnostic wax-ups and lifelike temporaries to try-in protocols, isolation, bonding, and cement selection that removes the guesswork from veneer delivery. Dr. Rads also explains why the case isn't over once the veneers are seated. He discusses the importance of the post-insertion visit, where he carefully reevaluates the occlusion and checks for any remaining excess cement that may need to be removed, small details that can make a big difference in long-term success and patient satisfaction. So if you want more confidence with your next veneer case, you won't want to miss this conversation. Before we get started, I'd like to thank all of you for tuning in. If you're enjoying the show, please follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and even better, leave a review. By doing so, you're not only showing support for what we do here, but your reviews are instrumental in getting more dental professionals to listen and benefit from our content. We really do appreciate it. Dr. Rads, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you again. We've known each other for decades, too long sometimes to admit how long we've been in this profession. But it's been a great ride, and we're still got lots of gas in the tank. And based on your last webinar that you did, that I want to bring attention to before we get into the program, Dr. Rads did an excellent presentation. It was delivered on May 21st, 2026, which is about 3 months ago. It's called Veneers, Beautiful Temporaries and Efficient Cementation. So it was really well presented, covering so many aspects of technique and materials about veneers. With decades of experience, you can access the webinar on vivalearning.com. Just type in Dr. Rad's last name, R-A-D-Z, and you will see the webinar. I highly recommend it. Don't you wish, Dr. Rads, that when you were 25 years old, you could just click on a webinar and somebody's going to show you how to do a veneer that has 30 years of experience?
That would have been wonderful.
Yeah, we didn't have that luxury. I mean, when you think about it, people come onto a website and click a webinar and then they watch your slides, and they don't have to leave their house or leave their office. Yeah. Just imagine what we had. Back then, we had to have a mentor, right? We had to have somebody that we could go to and watch them over the shoulder.
Yeah, and you'd spend money on plane tickets and hotels and lots of money on CE courses.
But you got there anyway. You still got the knowledge and expertise that you wanted, so you did it. But it's just a little bit easier today.
A little bit easier today, without a doubt.
I hear you. So I think a good way to begin this discussion, Dr. Rads, is with a diagnostic wax-up. That is the first stage of doing veneers, which is the topic of today's episode. How does the diagnostic wax-up contribute to predictable veneer outcomes? And why is it such an important communication tool for both the patient and the laboratory?
Yeah, so what the diagnostic wax-up is, it's my interpretation of, one, what the patient's telling me they're looking for. So the initial consultation, talking to the patient, what are you looking for? What are you looking to improve? Describe to me better what you think an ideal smile would look like on you. And I take that information the patient presents, and then you look at the clinical situation, and it's like, okay, to meet their expectations, what do I need to do to get there? And then I have to take my interpretation of the patient's expectations, translate that to my ceramist, and they're going to interpret my interpretation of the patient. The wax up, what that'll do is the ceramist will say, okay, I understand what you want. This is what I'll be able to deliver. And that's where it becomes a communication tool with the patient, because I want the wax up. I want to be able to present that to the patient and say, okay, based on what you told me you want, this is what I can create.
And what are you actually showing them? Are you showing them a model? Or I know in the analog days, you show them a wax up, right?
Yeah.
But today, you could show it to them on the screen if they get you that STL file back right away, or do it yourself in-house on a design software. I don't know how you do it, but you should be able to show them visually what it's going to look like pretty quickly, right? Without a model.
Yeah, we can do it without a model. And maybe it's just me showing my age. I like them to be in the office sitting with me. I think holding it in your hands, turning it in three dimensions. I have done it by a Zoom call with a few patients. Typically, those are patients that are coming from long distances. But my preference is still have them sit with me in the operatory, give me their feedback. Even on a digital model, I can make changes physically. Just pick up a handpiece and I can make some changes based on what their critique is. The importance of the wax up is that communication with the patient and show them what you can do. Sometimes there's things we can't do that they want to have done, so I can prove it to them by showing the model. It's like, you want this done, but you're in crossbite, so I can't do this, or you know, whatever the situation may be.
Is it done in an articulator or just free models in your hand?
No, just
free models. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What do you have to send the lab as far as acquisition data for them to create a pre-op digital wax up?
Yeah. That fill has never changed. Okay, it's the impression. This time it's scanned instead of an analog impression. But I send them the impression, the bite registration, that's scanned in. Photographs of the patients. I still use the AACD protocol of the 13 different views. That's what my ceramist is used to as well. So pictures, model or impressions digitally, and then the written prescription or a phone call. Again, where I'm translating what the patient's expectations are, along with what my requirements are. So that really hasn't changed in 30 years. Some are now, I don't do it, but I do have many of my contemporaries that are sending video now, you know, showing the patient's speech and the lip dynamics and stuff like that.
What about facial scans? Is that something that you are doing?
No, but I'm interested in it. It's fascinating stuff.
Yeah, the facial scan is what I'm hearing is that literally you're creating this virtual patient in the laboratory. They're seeing everything there, and they're stitching together intraoral scan with a facial scan. And now they have jaw tracking software, which is another amazing thing, which allows, I mean, that may not be that necessary for the social six or social four veneers necessarily, but maybe, I mean, if you're looking for
With the more complex cases, I think that's an incredible tool to have.
Yeah. I saw that in action, the jaw tracking. It was crazy with putting those labels on those stickers on the teeth and then having the patient move back and forth and it tracks it. I mean, this technology has been around a while, but it's now getting into dentistry. Let me ask you about provisionals. For some reason, many dentists find provisionalization to be one of the more stressful parts of veneer treatment. You know, because this is a very aesthetically driven endeavor that we're doing here. Can you walk us through your technique for creating consistent, predictable temporary veneers that accurately preview the final result?
Yeah, my technique hasn't changed in probably 20 years. When I did the webinar, I titled it Predictable because it is just so darn predictable. It's based on the wax up. So I've already met with the patient. We've reviewed the wax up. That's what they're expecting to see. So with the wax up, we'll make a putty matrix off of the wax up. And then once the teeth are prepared, all the information's gathered for the lab, the last thing we do is do the temporaries. So what I'll do is I spot etch the prepared teeth. I don't etch the whole tooth. That'll attach the temporary too well. Okay, just dead center of the tooth. I'm just going to put a spot etch. I let it sit there 20, 30 seconds, rinse dry. And then I'm going to load the putty matrix the way I would for a temporary crown, no different. I'm going to load that temporary matrix with the appropriate color of Luxotemp's, what I use forever, with the appropriate shade. Load that up, seat it to place.
You also do a reline using a light body impression material into the
Yeah.
putty. Is that correct?
Yeah, you're paying too much attention.
Yeah, too
Yes.
many details there. Well, that gives it a little bit more accuracy. So
Yeah.
when you take the putty matrix and then you reline it with the light body, now you've pulled it off the model and you have this perfect tray to deliver this Luxotemp, whatever you use. And you put a little bit of material in there, right? Because it has to be very thin.
Yeah.
You don't want to, there's not much room between the prepared tooth structure because you're doing fairly conservative in, I guess, most cases, veneers, right?
Yeah, good point. I'm gonna load it actually pretty full. I get what you're saying, Phil, but I'm gonna load it pretty full. But to your point, when I put that putty matrix in with the temporary material, I put it in and I'm keeping firm pressure on there because I know I'm gonna extrude a bunch of excess. Okay, but what I don't want to do if I try to be too precise and don't use enough material, now when you pull it out, you've got voids.
Now, what's the etch, and what is the etch actually doing? Because the material, you're not using any adhesive bonding
No.
agent, so the etch is just roughening up the enamel enough to give it mechanical retention to the temporary material.
Yeah, because think about this, Phil. When we were taught to do sealants, you etch the tooth and then you put a composite resin on the tooth, the sealant. You didn't put a bonding agent.
Right.
Maybe they teach it that way now, but the way I was taught, you etch and then put the composite. Same thing. So you etch the tooth, you're going to create a little bit of roughness right there. But there's enough mechanical retention of that little bit of etch to hold the composite resin to the tooth. If you put bonding agent on there, you're not going to get the temporaries off, or you don't get all the temporary material off. Now you go to seat your veneer, it doesn't fully seat, and you can't tell why because the temporary material blends in with the tooth.
Right, it's shaded exactly. Now you let that sit for about 5 minutes in the
Five
mount.
minutes.
5 minutes. So that's fully cured now. And then when you remove the matrix, you're looking at a temporary that's got some extra flash on it and stuff, but you don't even have it so that the patient could floss in between there. So explain that.
Yeah, that's where I gain my retention. Okay. If you do individual veneer temporaries, they're going to pop off. But if you keep them connected together, you gain more retention because they're wrapping around and you're grabbing a hold of the tooth. And they're not going to be able to floss. And I tell them they're not going to be able to floss and they don't like it. And I wish they could, but they can't. But if you meticulously trim up your temporary material and pay attention when you're going interproximally, because I clear off the papilla area. I get in there with a fine carbide burr to finish that out. I use a number 12 blade scalpel burr to even carve that out. And I'm not done in the papilla area till I can take my explorer and I can go facial to lingual.
I guess you use a proxy brush to
Proxy brush or a floss layer.
floss threader. Yeah. So you can hand them a Ziploc bag of those things on the way out the door. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you hope they actually listen to you and do it.
So it must look beautiful. I mean, I saw some of the pictures. They walk out with a temporary or a provisional that actually didn't take you that long to do, right? Because everything's all set
20,
up. What's the,
yeah.
what are you talking about chairside time to create?
20 minutes.
Okay, 20 minutes for what?
20, 30 minutes.
A six veneer
Yeah.
provisional?
Yeah.
20 minutes, and they're out the door, and usually 2 weeks until that veneer comes back.
Yep.
All right, so let's talk about the try-in appointment. That is kind of the last opportunity to catch problems before cementation. So what are the critical steps you follow during the try-in stage to evaluate fit, aesthetics, occlusion, and patient acceptance?
Yeah. So at the try-in appointment, first thing is getting the temporaries off. You got to get those off. You have to make sure the prepared tooth is clean.
What do you use to take them off?
Usually just a sickle scaler. You get in underneath the papilla and you just pop it and it'll fly across the room. But you have to
And
print
hopefully
a picture
you'll never
for
need it again, right? Once it flies across the room, you hope you'll never need it. You're done
We'll
with
make a
that,
new one.
right?
Yeah. So you remove all temporaries, you clean the prepared tooth. I've got set up in my operatory so I can, I've got a little chairside sandblaster. And I'll gently sandblast the tooth to make sure I've got rid of all the temporary material. And then the next step, before you actually try on the veneers, there's going to be some places where the tissue's irritated. So using multiple or any sort of different type of hemostatic technique, we need to control any bleeding that's happening.
Is cord okay using hemostatic cord?
No, yeah, good point. Pretty sure I made it in the webinar. If you try putting cord in there, more than likely, you're going to irritate the tissue more. So I avoid that at all costs. So a hemostatic solution that's aluminous based, like the Viscostat Clear, or the retraction paste that we have nowadays, those are really good.
Traxedent is one of them from Premier. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to control the hemorrhage that way. On rare occasions, sometimes I have to get out my diode laser and I actually have to spot coagulate with the
Now,
laser.
if you see a patient that comes back and they were not compliant with home care using that floss threader or proxy brush, even though you made the interproximal space for them to do it the best job they can, and you're touching that thing and it's oozing blood, you're going to send that patient home, I assume.
There's been a few occasions, fortunately very limited, that we've had to do that. And I've had a couple. You try to avoid them at all costs.
But I think the patient instruction and education you give them before they leave with that provisional, I think most of them are going to be pretty, I mean, they're paying a lot of money for this. This is they want this thing to work. So I guess overall you shouldn't have much of an issue with that. So on the try-in, once you have the teeth clean, let's talk about the try-in paste fitting or evaluating whether that veneer fits.
So once everything's cleaned up, the soft tissue's under control, now you're going to try on the veneers. I like using a try-in paste. Try-in paste are normally included in a lot of the light cured resin cements. I use the Choice 2 system from Bisco.
Why do you like that system?
Ease of use, predictability, color stability, and the flow characteristics. The combination of all of those just make it a really nice material to
That
use.
system includes the cement.
Yes.
So
Yes.
basically
The try-in.
everything you need is in there.
To the etch and the bonding agent and all of that too. So I'm going to use the try-in paste, one, because it will simulate the color of the cement, and two, it creates a little bit of adhesion to the tooth. So load the veneer, set it on the tooth, do all six, eight, 10 of them, get them all into place, clean up the excess try-in paste. Now I'm evaluating marginal fit, making sure everything looks nice, symmetrical, clean, evaluating the aesthetics of the porcelain itself. Assuming I'm happy with that, I need the patient to look at it. And that's where the try-in paste come in really handy because that little bit of adhesion allows me to sit the patient up, hand them a mirror. I warn them they have to be careful because they can knock these off, but it gives them a chance to look at those in place because I'm not going to put them in until they tell me they love them.
Do they sign off on these things? Like literally sign
Every
off?
time, every single time.
So they actually sign a document or an iPad or something. Yeah. Now, do you get the sign off on the provisional at that level too, or just on the try-in?
I don't. It's not the worst idea, but I do document in the chart the patient's response and critique of the temporaries. I will document that in the chart. I do know some doctors that do make the patient sign off on the temporaries. I feel we have to sign off on too damn many
Yeah,
things
no, I hear you. It gets to the
already.
point like,
So I
yeah.
try to minimize it, but I do document that we had the conversation. The patient said it was okay. Not the worst idea
Let me
to
ask you
have.
this. How, with your experience of doing, I don't know, thousands and thousands of veneers in your career, who knows? How close is that provisional to the final delivery veneers where if the patient is fully pleased with the provisional, what are the odds that they wouldn't like the try-end?
Yeah. Typically, the only hiccup I'll ever get is shade, contour, fit, occlusion, all of that. We're going to nail that in the temporary.
Right, because shade on the provisional side, you're limited to whatever that goop comes in.
Right.
Right, where you have much more control when you're doing with laboratory work.
Right.
Okay, I see.
So, yeah, on the rare occasion where they do not approve at the try-end stage, I'd say 90, 95% of the time, it's because of shade.
You mentioned on your webinar that you like to use transparent try-end paste.
Yeah.
And also transparent cement. Tell us about that.
I want the color to come from the porcelain. If you're trying to alter color using your cement, what happens is the depth of color starts to disappear. So your porcelain veneer is thin enough that it's picking up the shade of the tooth that's behind it. Okay, light goes through the porcelain, hits the natural tooth, and then is reflected and refracted back. You change the color with the cement. Now light goes through the porcelain, it hits the wall. Okay, so you don't get that depth of color if you're altering shades with the color of your cement.
Okay, so let's say you did a try-in on me and you've got six veneers in there and I don't think it's the value was high enough. I want it brighter. What do you do?
I will take the try-in paste, and whether it's the bleach shade or the white shade or the opaque shade, I will try it in again, altering the shade with the try-in paste and see if I can get you to where you want to be. So I'm definitely going to take a look at that. And if that little bit of change, because you're not going to get a lot of change, okay? But if that little bit of change is what takes you from I kind of like it to that's what I want, great, we go from there.
So then you'll use the same shade cement that exactly matches the try-in paste.
Yeah, yeah. Now, and the system's designed so that the try-in paste and the cement, they're identical.
So it seems to me that every time you start, you should start with the transparent try-in paste.
Every time.
Okay.
That's every time.
Okay. And then play around with the colors. If you can micro-optimize it a little bit and get the patient to be satisfied, great. And if you can't, what do you do? Back to the lab.
Photographs and send them back.
Send them back to the lab. Yeah.
Yeah.
And how often does that happen? And typically, we have a lot of young dentists that are on this. So yeah. How often should they expect that to happen realistically?
If you're communicating well with the patient in the very beginning and communicating well with your ceramist, 10%, 15%.
Right,
jinxing me by asking me these questions, Phil. Now it's going to happen to me tomorrow.
Well,
it's rare.
Because the reason why I'm asking is because the provisional is a completely different material and the lab doesn't know anything about it. It comes out of a box, and you buy it in bulk, whatever. So you're getting a shade range for that patient. But when that thing comes back from the lab, that's based on your discussions, you working with the lab and what they're looking for. But I think more than anything, when that thing is delivered, it's going to be so beautiful. I don't think the patient's going to want to send it back and have to start all over again if it's close.
Yeah. Well, the aesthetics of going from porcelain to composite resin, bisacryl temporaries, that change is so dramatic that the patient's immediately going to notice the depth of color, the transition of color, the separation because they're not connected in the final veneers. Usually the initial response is more likely, I like the temporaries, I love these.
Right.
Rarely do I get, I like my temporaries better.
Right. Now, let me ask you about materials. You know, zirconia is a hot material right now, and you could make veneers, 0.3, 0.5 millimeters thin. I don't even want to say 0.5 millimeters thick. I'm saying 0.5 millimeters thin. But typically we're still using lithium disilicate, right? And there's two different ways of using these materials when you're bonding them in or you're cementing them in. Which material do you use primarily? I would assume it's lithium disilicate?
Exclusively.
Okay, so you don't see a reason to use zirconia at this point?
No, I use a lot of zirconia, but never as a veneer.
It doesn't have the translucency?
Depth of color, translucency.
Bondability too.
I'm still not convinced. And maybe it's just me being old and not keeping, I don't want to keep up on the literature, but I trust lithium disilicate to bond to the tooth.
Right. And if you don't need the strength that zirconia is providing, and you do have the confidence issue and the uncertainties, like you're saying, why bother with it for veneers?
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm also old enough, I don't like dealing with failure.
Yeah, I am with you 100% on that.
Risk avoidance.
Yes, yes. Risk averse is exactly the word. All right, so let's talk about cement selection. So when we're preparing the tooth for veneers, we're not relying on mechanical retention. That's just the nature of the veneer prep. So we certainly need to get some bond strength. Now, self-adhesive or self-etched self-adhesive cements don't provide us with that kind of bond strength. So what are we looking at? What should we be using?
Yeah. Yeah. And even on all the self-etched cements, doesn't matter who makes them. If you look at the indications for use, all of them in that document will say contraindicated for veneers. So what it means is the bond strength of the self-adhesive cement is just not there yet. And there's no reason to use them.
So if you would, share with us your clinical technique on cementing in your veneers. Preparation of both the actual lithium disilicate, the intaglial surface, and also the tooth structure.
Yeah. Take the veneer off, rinse it out, air water spray. I don't need to re-etch it. It's already been etched in the lab, but I do need to clean it because it's been contaminated in the mouth. Saliva, blood, you know, whatever. So I'm going to clean it. Bisco makes a product called ZirClean, designed for zirconia, but it will work on lithium disilicate. Ivoclar makes IvoClean, specifically made to clean lithium disilicate. But I'm going to clean the internal aspect of that veneer that's been contaminated in the mouth. And then I'm going to silanate that veneer. I'm actually resilanating it because it was silanated in the lab, but I'm going to do it again. Can't hurt, might help. And then that's sitting over here being done. While I'm doing that, my dental assistant is going to rinse the prepared teeth and then take a prophy cup with pumice, and she's going to clean those prepared teeth again. And then one of the things I train them to look for is if we had an area that was bleeding, be sure it's not bleeding now. So I'm going to go back to the hemostatic agent because we've been in there manipulating and all that.
So you use a hemostatic agent at that point?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want a drop of blood on those teeth. I don't want any contamination at all. So we clean and prepare the porcelain. We clean and prepare the prep and the soft tissue. And now I'm ready to go to cement.
But you haven't put your adhesive bonding agent yet on the tooth.
No.
Okay.
No. Okay. So those two things are going on behind the patient, or while the dental assistant's working on the patient, I'm preparing the porcelain. Now we're going to isolate the area. Could use a rubber dam, honestly. And I've been doing this long enough that if I have a patient who's well behaved, listens to instructions, I can do this with orthodontic retractors. So I'm going to isolate the area, rubber dam, orthodontic retractors, whatever, isolate the area. I'm going to deliver all the veneers at the same time. So next step is etch all the prepared teeth, 20 seconds, 30 seconds, rinse, dry. Now I'm going to place my universal bonding agent on all the teeth. Okay, a good 20, 30, 40 seconds putting that on all the teeth. Then I'm going to aggressively air dry that. And I want to light cure each tooth about 10 seconds is good. Okay. While my assistant is light curing those, I'm starting to load the veneers with the cement. And I'm going to start with the two centrals, get those into place. Then she'll take over and start loading and handing them to me. Give me the lateral. Give me the lateral. Give me the canine. Give me the canine premolar for going back that far. I'm going to get them all into place. Now, I've put those into place fairly quickly. I've got time to evaluate the seat, clean off the excess cement, go back and reevaluate, make sure I have them in the right place, clean off a little bit more cement, go back to the centrals, look at the centrals, make sure they're exactly where I want them. I'm going to hold them in place, and right on top of the papilla, I'm going to have my assistant light cure for 10 seconds. And then I move over central lateral, check it, look at it, clean off more cement, hold it to place. Light cure that for 10 seconds. Go to the other central lateral. same thing, and I repeat it back and forth. And I'm just tacking it into place to stabilize the veneer for me to move to the next veneer. So we go back, forth, back, forth. Now, once I've got them all in there, now each tooth, 30 seconds, 30 seconds, 30 seconds from the lingual, 30 seconds, 30 seconds, 30 seconds. Then we remove everything, let the patient relax for a little bit, and now we have to clean things up.
Yeah, and before we get to cleaning up, I want to just mention that you used etch on the tooth before the universal adhesive. Now, you basically apply this etch to the entire surface of the tooth because it's all enamel. I just wanted to clear that up, because if you were doing a restoration where there was dentin, you probably would have used a selective etch and then used the universal bonding agent, because you don't want to have phosphoric acid on dentin followed by a selective etch, followed by a universal adhesive. But that wasn't the issue here, because we're doing veneers and it's all enamel.
Yeah, there may be a little bit of exposed dentin here and there, but...
you weren't worried about it.
No. But the demonstrated bond strength to etch enamel is so good.
Yeah, no doubt.
Self-etch, you could probably do a self-etch bonding agent without, but why would you?
Yeah.
To save a few seconds?
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely.
In fact,
that's what's so successful about using a universal bonding agent with the self-etching technique, is because you do put the phosphoric acid on the enamel and you don't put any etch on the dentin. And the universal adhesive takes care of that self-etching dentin in a more gentler way. And then, of course, you get very powerful bonding to the enamel.
Right.
And you've cured fully at this point?
Fully.
Okay.
Fully. Yeah.
Now what?
Now we're going to have a little bit of excess cement. So I start with a 12-fluted carbide. You'll have more excess cement on the lingual side. So I get a football-shaped carbide, and I go to the lingual with my mirror, and I start looking for cement and cleaning it off. Once I've got all that cleaned off, now I go to the facial, 12 or 16-fluted carbide, all around each margin, getting rid of that. On top of the papilla is where most of the excess cement will be. Number 12 scalpel blade, and just carve in there, and you can get in a little bit further and safer on top of the papilla. Get rid of that excess cement. And then the last thing I have to do is separate the teeth, because they're still probably connected together. I'm not going to be able to floss in between. And that's where I use something called a Siri saw that Denmat makes. It's a little metal blade that's got teeth on the end. It's serrated. It's attached to a little mini hacksaw blade. If you've seen a plumber's hacksaw, it looks like that, just this big. And I take that and I'll be able to separate in between every interproximal area.
And you don't open up any contacts doing that?
No, the teeth will flex on the periodontal ligament. So just like when you put a wooden wedge in between your matrix band when you're doing a class two, same thing. There's a little bit of flex built into the tooth. So as you go down with that blade, the tooth will flex a little bit. As it flexes, it separates. The blade will go through. You don't create a diastema. Everybody worries about that until they do it.
Right, because the cement is actually probably pushing the teeth apart a little bit anyway. And when you remove it, it's snapping back. Yep, comes
back.
Yeah. Now, I know you use a light-cured cement, and you have your opinion on using a dual-cure cement for veneers. Tell us about that.
Two things to worry about. One is, with a dual-cure, once your catalyst and base are mixed, now you're on the clock. And when you're trying to cement multiple veneers, like I do, you're going to run out of time. Now, depending on the light conditions in your operatory, you might have 3.5 minutes, you might have 5.5, 6 minutes. And I could probably do it with a dual cure because I've just done a lot of them. But, if one veneer doesn't quite seat to place and now I'm fighting it or putting more cement in it and trying to get back, I don't have any room for error. So I don't like the dual cure because of being on the clock. Now with light cure, you're still on the clock. The ambient light will eventually set it, but I've got more time. Okay, the other thing I think you might be getting to with dual cure is shade shifting.
Right, it gets darker.
There's a concern with dual cures that all the manufacturers have been working on fighting, and some of them say they've figured it out. But dual cures have a bad reputation of shade shift over time, meaning as time goes on and the cement ages, it gets darker. And it used to be a lot worse years ago. Okay, we know what causes it. We've addressed it. We, the manufacturer world, trying to eliminate it, but I'm not convinced we've 100% eliminated it. So with the dual cure, you run the risk of that cement getting a little darker over time. As the cement gets darker because your veneers are so thin, that might show through your veneer. So I avoid that risk by just avoiding that category of product.
Yeah.
Could I use it? Yes. Will it work? Absolutely. But if I have a little more working time and I don't have to worry about the potential of shade shifting over time, why not?
Yeah, why risk it?
So the only downside I could see, Phil, is inventory.
Mm-hmm.
Because I only use Light Cure for veneers. I don't use it for anything else. So I have to carry a separate product right now.
Right. That's a good
to
point.
To be able to do that. That's the only reason. You know, if you're only doing two veneer cases a year and you're using dual cure cements on everything else, okay. You know, I can see it. That's the only reason I can see why to switch to dual cure.
No, that's a great point. That's a great point. What does your post-operative appointment look like to ensure that these veneers are going to have longevity? You're going to get predictable long-term success after they've been delivered. What does that look like?
I want to be in the veneers 1 to 2 weeks. I want to get used to them because my primary concern is going to be occlusion. And when you've had a patient in the chair and my delivery appointment for 6, 8, 10 veneers is about 2.5, 3, could be 4 hours. By the time you get to check in the occlusion, they're tired, they're numb, they're starting to get sore. They're sick of seeing me and hearing my voice. Bite, bite, bite. How's that feel? Great. Get me out of here. Right? And they're numb. Their proprioception is not the same as when they're not numb and they're not sore. So I want them back in a week or two, and I'm adamant about it. That's just part of what you paid for. You don't come back for that appointment, there's no guarantee on the work, okay? So 1 to 2 weeks, what I'm looking for, one, is the occlusion. How's it feel? What are you bumping into? You know, how's your speech? You know, do you feel like you're talking correctly? All those things, and I'm going to double check it, okay? They're not numb. Now they're going to be able to bite together normally. And I'm going to look for that and find, is there an interference? Laterals are always what I see when they move into function and they go into their lateral guidance. They're picking up the distal of a lateral. It's like, I don't want that. I'm going to eliminate that. So I'm checking the occlusion. But the other thing is I'm looking for excess cement because I know with my cementation technique that I'm probably going to miss a little piece of cement over here or there, or when they're flossing, it's shredding right here between the canine and the lateral. And I got to go back and get that little bit of excess cement out. So for the soft tissue health, long-term, I've got to be sure gotten rid of all that.
Yeah,
cement.
That's a critical endeavor right there. Yeah. I mean, you'll probably see some reddening of the gingiva if there is excess cement, or they'll be, by 2 weeks, they'll be complaining that they're a little uncomfortable, right, in certain areas.
Yeah. Well, they're going to say every time I floss here,
it bleeds. Right. Or it tears the floss. Yeah.
Yep. And I get right back in there and you find just this tiny little bit of cement.
Yeah. It's hard for radiographs to pick that up, isn't it? You can't really get that on a radiograph.
Yeah. You're going to see a red papilla or you're going to see a bleed when you floss it, or they're going to tell you the cement, the floss shreds. You'll pick it up really fast.
Yeah. No, fantastic stuff. Again, Dr. Rads, we really appreciate you talking to us. You've been, you know, as long as I've been in this profession, your name has been kind of a household name when it comes to key opinion leaders and lecturers. You've lectured just about everywhere. But what makes this so fascinating, this form of media, is that we could have this conversation and you can reach, for this episode alone, tens of thousands of people. And it's a very powerful thing, especially for someone that has the kind of experience you have. It's invaluable. And all over the world, they come from all over the world to hear it.
Yeah, no, it's impressive what you guys have built.
Well, it's as I always say, it's I'm the guy asking the questions. It's it's who we're talking to that matters. I could only talk about endo for so long. All right, Dr. Rads, hopefully we'll have you on again soon. Enjoy Colorado, and it's been a great conversation. We really appreciate your time.
Yeah, it's always good talking to you, Phil. I appreciate it.